It's hard to forget that BP oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico back in 2010. The government hasn't. In fact, just this past April, the Bureau of Safety and Environmental Enforcement finalized new rules for offshore well control. Last month, it held a workshop to help people from the oil drilling industry understand it. Joining me with more on this program, Doug Morris, Chief of Offshore Regulatory Programs at the BSEE. Mr. Morris, great to have you on.
Glad to be here, Tom.
So tell us about this rule. How did you arrive at it? How long did it take to develop this rule? And does it replace a rule that was already in place?
The overall objective of the rule is to reduce risk involved in offshore drilling through a series of comprehensive new requirements. As you mentioned, obviously the driver for the rule was a Deepwater Horizon tragedy that occurred in 2010. Following that incident, blowout, there were multiple investigations related to equipment, to our regulatory program, and we received quite a few recommendations on how to adjust our regulatory program. So for the last approximately 5 years, the agency has been working on doing exactly that. We have worked continuously over the last few years to get this rulemaking done. So it's a big lift to get it done and out in April of this year.
And you must have gotten many, many comments, and I imagine some pushback from the drilling industry on what they would be required to do. How would you summarize their reaction and what it is they wanted from the agency?
Well, we did, when we published this, it was April 2015, for public comment, we did receive quite a few comments from multiple parties. From the industry, we received comments from operators, drilling contractors, and the equipment manufacturers who were obviously interested in the final rule. We received more than 170 comments. It's a very technical rule, and we received very technical comments. So it took a while to work through those and make sure they were properly addressed. In general, the industry was concerned about provisions they thought were too prescriptive. They were concerned about overall costs. They asked for various provisions to be clarified, which we, I think, we accomplished in the final rule. We did receive a lot of support for the rule from the general public and various environmental groups. So we had a mixed bag of comments that we had to work through.
And you're an engineer yourself in this area, so you must know what is possible and what is practical for safety in these wells.
Well, yes, and this is very complicated equipment technology. So leading up to the issuance of the proposed rule, we did have multiple meetings with industry. We had studies to look at, as I mentioned before. We had recommendations arising on Deepwater Horizon. So we had a lot of input leading up to the proposed rule, and certainly after we received comments on that rule, we incorporated the appropriate ones into the final rule.
And, of course, it is technical, as you point out. And if you look at one of these platforms, and I've only seen them in pictures, but there's a superstructure, and at the very bottom, way down in the water, there's a hole with something on top of it. And so does the rule comprehensively cover everything from where the oil comes out to the very top where the fire was?
The rule encompasses, a lot of it's focused on blow-up preventers. This is the equipment that is needed in an emergency situation to shut in the well and prevent the release of oil or natural gas. It's a critical piece of safety equipment, and that was one of the issues at Deepwater Horizon. That equipment, in fact, did not work. So we addressed that in the rule, but we also addressed other issues arising on Deepwater Horizon, which relate to the actual design of the well, other safety issues related to cementing. So it's a very comprehensive rule. That's why we refer to it as the well control rule rather than just a blowout preventer rule. It covers a lot of ground and a lot of factors that are included in the final rule.
How many pages is it?
Well, the text itself is probably about 100 pages. The package, when you look at how we address public comments and all the related materials that you need for a final agency rulemaking, you're looking at probably 500 pages.
We're speaking with Doug Morris. He is Chief of Offshore Regulatory Programs at the Bureau of Safety and Environmental Enforcement. Is there an estimate of what this will cost the industry? Rules do need to have a cost estimate.
Yes, our estimate was about $890 million over 10 years. There are also benefits in the rule, primarily a reduction in the likelihood of an oil spill, the loss of life. And there were other operational savings that we identified. So, in fact, the benefits are $636 million over that same 10-year interval.
I guess if you look at the fines that BP faced, the benefits could be billions.
We essentially focused on a reduction of the risk of that catastrophic blowout, and so that was a factor in identifying the benefits.
And does the rule cover the specifications for blowout preventers, the equipment itself, as well as techniques for how this is done, or is it pretty much just a technique thing or just an equipment thing?
It's both. We've adopted the latest industry standards related to blowout preventers. Following Deepwater Horizon, the industry did move forward and voluntarily adopt a variety of new standards. We have taken those and made those mandatory, and where appropriate, have supplemented those requirements.
I imagine a big part of this is making sure that the equipment is maintained. I mean, if you drop an expensive piece of gear 300 or 500 feet into salt water, how do you know it's going to work 5 years from now?
One of the key items in the rule is to increase the reliability of this equipment. Again, it's equipment that when you need it has to work, absolutely has to work. So we have quite a few new requirements related to maintenance and repair of the equipment, ensuring that there's traceability. And again, the objective is an increased reliability, but also gain ensuring that this equipment will perform when it's needed in an emergency.
And as I understand this, the process of stopping a blowout is called choke and kill. If you could, just briefly in layman's terms, tell us what happens if there is a blowout, or what should happen.
Hopefully you never have a blowout. Blowout's the uncontrolled release of hydrocarbons. During drilling operations, you also have occasionally have a situation where you need to stop drilling, shut in the well, and regain control. That's what a blowout preventer is used for. You shut in the well, start operations again, regain control over the situation, and that allows you to continue drilling. Again, a blowout is something that it's fairly rare, and the purpose of this rule is to ensure that the risk of loss of well control and the release of hydrocarbons is minimized.
So the preventer is something that is invoked from time to time and not just in the catastrophic failure situation like BP had.
Right. It's a key part of the safety equipment. It's used often during well control operations where you need to shut in a well during typical drilling mode. But there's also RAM's equipment on there that in an emergency, an actual blowout situation where you lost control, it severs everything in whole and closes in the well. So it's used for typical drilling operations, but it's also used in that extreme event where you actually have to cut everything and shut in the well.
And just out of curiosity, how big a cross is the well opening itself at the very bottom?
Well, it ranges. The size of the hole is it ranges from 2 feet to towards the bottom of the hole. It's a relatively small hole. So the equipment has to be able to shut in a well over various types of scenarios and different types of pressure ratings. So it's might be on the well site for a couple months to allow that well to be completed.
Sounds complicated, but something that ought to be there. Doug Morris is Chief of Offshore Regulatory Programs at the Interior Department's Bureau of Safety and Environmental Enforcement. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you.
You can read more and share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive and click share with friends.